Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Good morning. You all right? I hope you are. I sincerely hope you are. Many apologies for being ever so slightly late. It's 2 minutes past. 2 minutes past 8 in the a.m. British summertime. Tardy. Tardy. Apologies. But we've got a guest this morning via Zoom, so we just had to check everything was okay, which it is. It is now Friday, isn't it? That Friday feeling. Thank F it's Friday, the 15th of May in the year of our Lord, 2026. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Good, great, great. And who are you guys? Come now, you know who you are. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Without you, it isn't a thing. Thank you for joining me, really, sincerely. There's no way to express how sincerely I mean that. Without you, it isn't anything. It really isn't. Okay. It's another sort of largely Labour day. Burnham, Angela the Fridge Rainer. It's a queer starling. The whole nine yards. But I do have a guest. And I'm going to go through it with them, as always, that sort of thing. So we are privileged to be joined by none other than Lewis the Beard Brackpool of Restore Britain fame. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you, Bo. It's great to see you. I think the last time we spoke, I had a little too much to drink, I think, because we were pre-celebrating the elections up in Great Yarmouth. So it's great to see you, man.
Yeah. No, thanks for coming on. Really, really appreciate your time. And if anyone who doesn't know, apart from just being like an online personality in your own right, you do actually work for Restore Britain. So you're in the team and everything.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Maybe let people know a little bit about what you did before that with like your freedom of information requests and all that sort of stuff, how you got sort of involved in all this, just in case there's anyone out there, any mad people out there that aren't aware of who you are.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So my name's Lewis Brackpool. I've been doing journalism for about 5 years, got into it straight after the COVID madness because I felt like I was being lied to. So I went out with a cameraman and a friend who was a cameraman, and I went out with a microphone and started asking people questions. That snowballed into something that I never thought I'd ever predict. Worked for various organizations as a reporter and a journalist, found out a bit more about the Freedom of Information Act and how we could utilize it against the government, and started just annoying and pestering the government by using this particular act and trying to acquire data from them to basically embarrass them. And then once Restore Britain was started up, I got a phone call from a Mr. Charlie Downs, who's a friend of the show and a very good friend of mine in real life. And I got the call from Restore to ask to join, to set up the Restore's investigations unit and whistleblowing line to basically help with concerns regarding that, whether it be within government or the wider public life. And it is an absolute, and this is a bit of a cursed word, but I'm going to use it anyway. It's an absolute privilege to be part of Restore Britain. And we are really hitting the ground running, and it's an exciting time in British politics.
Absolutely. You was there from one of the very, very, very earliest members. So amazing stuff. Brilliant. And the team seems to be growing all the time from what I gather. When I was down there in Great Yarmouth, there was quite a lot more people working for the party than I thought there were. So it's great. It's all the trajectory, the momentum is all onwards and upwards.
It certainly is. It certainly is. I'm super excited to see where we go next. So, yes. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Let's just have you. I believe you understand the format of the show. You might have seen Breakfast with Bo before, perhaps.
Yes.
And so we go through the papers and just talk all about it, and I'll get your takes and ask if you've got any tidbits from sort of inside the thinking of Restore on various bits and bobs, if you're allowed, if it's not sort of a secret or anything. So, all right, today is a day where it's all sort of still Keir Starmer stuff. So if I if we go straight to... Harry, can you bring up the papers there? On the screen, on our screen? Can you do that? All right, anyway. Anyway... Can people see that? The papers? Front page of the papers? There you go. There you go. There it is. All right. Poor little Harry, a bit flustered this morning. Pray for Harry. Okay. We'll quickly whip through the some of the front page. Just get to the eye paper because it's got all like the half a dozen main points that we could talk about. Starmer's battle as Burnham handed route back to Westminster. That's probably the big one. The Metro. Oh, gross. Rivals. Okay. All right. All right. The Sun. Burn to Run. Baby, he was burned to run. Do, do, do. The Daily Telegraph. Burnham launches bid for number 10. Do, do, do. Burnham makes move. Look, Keir Starmer's behind bars. The Guardian. Bid to topple in a by-election. The Star. Crash and Burnham. Very clever. Very, very clever. All right. Here we go. Streeting and Burnham start leadership battle to force out Starmer. Okay, let's go through these a bit in a bit more detail. Keir Starmer's Labour critics and make their move. So that's one of the big things. The first thing. Streeting quits yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. And we got his letter. I don't know if you read it. It was a bit...
I didn't.
It was a bit obsequious and a bit like, thank you so much for letting me serve in your government. And like the only thing he really said... Some papers described it as like some sort of blistering, withering attack. It wasn't. It's cool. There's one bit where he goes, there's a bit of a power vacuum at the top of cabinet. That's about it. And then at the end, again, he's like, thank you so much. It's been the privilege of my life to work with you. Da-da-da. Anyway, and we got Starmer's letter back, like really passive aggressive, weak letter stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been great to work with you. Thank you for all your work you've done over the time. Anyway, all right. But he didn't launch a leadership bid. Streeting. He quit but didn't launch a leadership bid. Now, whether that's because he didn't actually have the 81 MPs to back him, or whether there's been some sort of grand strategy deal in the background, all of Keir Starmer's enemies clubbing together and deciding the one overarching strategy is to get Burnham in, I don't know. But what do you think of that? Streeting and various other ministers, Jess Phillips quitting, but not still... A formal leadership bid not being triggered yet.
It is interesting. I know that quite recently, Starmer gave, I think, a bit of a stern warning to his MPs saying, you know, if you do quit, you know, you will let Reform in. And we don't want that X, Y, and Z. So it is fascinating to see sort of the iron bar being hammered from Keir Starmer from behind the scenes. It is quite fascinating. But... No, I mean, we've had two governments in a row now do this, where they put out these really weak, wet lettuce letters out saying, I'm resigning. I've had enough. I'm sorry. I can't handle it anymore. It's been an absolute privilege to serve you. You know, it happened under the Boris government with so many MPs deciding to quit because of the vaccine passports. And now we're seeing something very, very similar. I don't know. I think. In my view, it would be terrible if we had a general election right now, a snap election, which I don't think is going to happen.
From Restore personally. Britain's point of view, you mean?
From our position, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
In my own personal view, yes, I think that would be a disaster. It wouldn't be great, but I think Keir Starmer is too much of a narcissist to actually back down. I actually don't know what's going to happen, but. I presume because of what Keir Starmer's like in terms of the way that he's governing and the way his personality is essentially robotic is I don't think he's going anywhere personally, even though that there has been a little bit of a revolt. I don't know what your take is.
Yeah, no, my feeling at the moment is that the Labour Party, all Starmer and the opposition to Starmer in the Labour Party are going to sort of let the Burnham thing and that by-election play out and then see where they are there. And even if he does, if Burnham doesn't win that, then okay, that's a different timeline. If he does, then there's a leadership race, which takes a while. And anyway, some people saying that all of this might not come to a head until Labour Party conference, which is in September.
Yeah. Well, as you
at
know,
this moment in time, on this morning, I wouldn't be surprised if we are looking at that now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, politics, unfortunately, is about 60 to 70% optics. Mm. So they'll want to do it. They want to time it right if they want to do a kind of leadership bid. I mean, we say this every time, be careful what you wish for. You know, obviously, Starmer, that was a bit of a slip. Starmer was Starmer's awful, obviously. We know that. I don't need to go into detail about that. We obviously don't like him and the way he governs, obviously. But you never know what's around the corner if he's pushed aside and then a new leader is put in. I mean, optically, it would be awful to have Angela Rayner as the next leader. You know, I know that there's this big bid for Burnham, but he needs to win a by-election first if he's actually confirmed properly to stand. I know he put out a tweet last night saying that he's, I believe, looking to stand. I think that's the last I've seen, but I'm not sure if there's been any updates since.
Yeah, no, there's been a whole bunch. So yesterday I reported on the Beau show, Breakfast with Beau, I reported that a particular MP was going to stand down, what was it, Afzal Khan. I only told you guys that because that's what the rumours were, that's what the papers were saying. Turns out it wasn't him, it's another guy, Josh Simons.
Right.
Okay, so Josh Simons has actually resigned. He's actually fully done it already. He did that last night. There's like his letter is published as well. Interestingly, he explicitly said it was just to stand aside for Burnham. I didn't think you was allowed to do that, but obviously you are. Obviously you are. Okay. He's a real scumbag, that Josh Simons. A young guy. He's like a diehard Labour. Labour forever. Like he was thrown out of. He was in cabinet, I believe, and he was thrown out because of a scandal to do with that he was spying on journalists.
Oh, God.
And Starmer had put him in charge of the ID card initiative. So that guy, that Josh Simons.
Brilliant.
What a scumbag. A perfect example of somebody I wouldn't want in power, in Parliament. Nowhere near it. Just like an amoral commie. He stepped down now because he's a Burnham man. He's a diehard Burnham man, it seems. So he has actually stepped down. So that will trigger that by-election. Okay. Mm. And that's in, what's it called? In, Makerfield. Yeah. So the next thing was, is Burnham going, are the Labour Party going to select Burnham? Because they're sort of in a sanctum of power, the NEC, isn't it? National Executive Committee, where there's only like 8, 10, 12 people in it, like the most senior people in government.
Mm.
With the Galton and Denton thing, they blocked him almost unanimously, I think, very close to unanimously. Well, they've now come out this morning, insiders, and said the NEC won't block Andy Burnham from that, which is interesting. Very, 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 very interesting. I thought that would be a massive, massive hurdle, a massive internal battle for Burnham or Burnham's camp. Doesn't seem to have been. I mean, what do you think of that? What's changed since Gaunton and Denton when they said, no, he's best placed to be mayor. We need all our best people as mayors. And now, no. I mean, what do you make of that?
I think time is just running out for Labour and I think they're just getting desperate. I think when a power struggle happens within government, when a government becomes unbelievably popular, the only way to kind of save it is to either bring in a new face that will try and galvanize people. And I think to pick Burnham as the guy to do that, I mean, is laughable. I mean, didn't the guy vote for the Iraq war? And wasn't there something to do with inquiries happening that he's allegedly shot down? I'm not sure.
He's embroiled in sort of pouring cold water on sex gang inquiries in the past. Yeah, sorry, go on.
I heard about that, yeah. So not quite the, it's either getting a new fresh face in to struggle with power, or it's a war. You know, it's an actual, it's a war that you're put in. And I mean a conflict. No, I don't mean a war within the power struggle. I mean an actual war to sort of galvanize people. And I think they're just getting incredibly desperate. I think you look at the results from Labour. I mean, the turnout on the local elections from, you know, various other places, apart from Great Yarmouth, was pretty low. But seeing Labour lose nearly 1,500 council seats in one swooping blow, I mean, that must do a lot of damage to not only the party, but of course, bruising the ego if Keir Starmer actually reacts to something like that. I mean, you can't even tell. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Really was bruising, wasn't it? And like losing control in Wales, breaking a political stranglehold in Wales that they've had for 100 years.
Yeah.
From Keir to Keir.
Bad.
Keir Hardie to Keir Starmer. I mean, bookending it with a Keir. Yeah, the interesting thing is, when you said a minute ago that their great hope, the person they hope will draw them back from the precipice, will save them from electoral annihilation is Andy Burnham. That's laughable. Yeah, yeah. Could I just make a broader point here? That people don't seem to be saying. I haven't seen many people or any real people in the mainstream media sort of saying this. If you remember, if you're old enough, you might just about be old enough. It's when I was more like a teenager times, in the Blair years and the Brown years a bit. Burnham was like barely B team. Like yeah. Burnham wasn't like some. He's quite popular within the Labour Party membership. It wasn't massively popular in the country or anything. Like as we've got Burnham as leader, we're going to win the next general election. No, why are you thinking that? Where do you get that calculation from? Like he's just another low-T soy boy, parlouring pinko. He's nothing. He's a nothing man. What, you know, like, you look back at the early Blair years, right? You look back at people like, oh, I don't know, just a lot of them. Jack Straw, like yeah. Robin Cook, someone like David Blunkett, right? They're all disgusting Fabian socialists, but they were formidable men. Yeah. They were formidable political operators, right? They weren't to be trifled with type politicians.
Yeah.
Someone like Andy Burnham was bottom of the barrel then, right? They were like, kick him out in the end, after 20-odd years, whatever, just put him down into like the minor leagues, go and let him be a mayor somewhere. He's not, like, that's the sort of level he is. Where this calculation comes from within Labour that like, it's Burnham or bust, Burnham will save us. Why? I don't get it. Do you?
No, I don't get it. I mean, you can really test and see how much a party or an organisation within the party likes a particular politician by where they go next after a premiership of some sort. I mean, what did Blair do as soon as he finished up here? I mean, technically, he carried on, really. He continued his legacy, but through the Tory party and everywhere else. But where were they put? You know, we even had actual communists being put in places like the WHO and, you know, various organizations here. Burnham was, like you said, just give him a mayor role, like somewhere, random place. Just give him a mayor role and just, you know, keep him in the sidelines there. And it's actually funny to see how much he is respected, which is not that much. I don't know.
Yeah, I never understood when it started coming out. What, like, not that long after Starmer got into power, really? What, within 6 months, even? You sort of hear rumours of Burnham, you know? Like, I'm already like, what? Who cares?
What,
the Andy Burnham, like the bottom of the dregs of Tony Blair's barrel. Like the scrapings off the bottom of the Blairite era, really? That's run for leadership a number of times and never won it because again, he's like Wes Streeting or he's like Keir Starmer himself, comes across to me as a weak person, physically, but also politically, morally. He's not a firebrand, is he?
He's like the David Brent of the Labour Party, essentially. Yeah.
Again, he seems to me quite sort of effeminate, even. I don't know. Why do they think in the Labour Party that he is their magic bullet back to get for re-election? No idea. It really is it just shows the dearth of talent in the Labour Party, I suppose. Really, right? If that's the best, they can all agree, or most of them agree, apart from the far, far, far left of the party, they can all agree that Burnham's the guy. Really? Right. Okay. All right, Burnham.
Mental.
All right. So, so there's this by-election's going to happen then.
Yeah.
It's not a safe Labour seat.
No, it's not.
The majority there, I think, is something like that Josh Simons, 5,000, 5,300 or something.
That's
not razor thin, but that's not what you'd call a particularly safe seat, is it?
No, not at all. And I think the polls are, well, obviously they would have shrunk for Labour anyway, but Labour was polling at 24%, I think. I'm not sure if that's the latest polls for how well...
Specifically in that area, you mean?
In that area, compared, I think, Reformer polling at around 50 for that
really?
Area, which is massive. I think that's what I saw, I think, last night. It's quite massive. It's quite a big gap. It's quite fun to look at.
That's the funniest outcome for me, that the NEC let him do it. He runs and just totally, totally loses. And everyone in the Labour Party that wanted him, every single anti-Keir person in the Labour Party that were pinning all their hopes on Burnham, they're just all just like, ugh. What now? Like that was our one strategy.
That was our guy.
Yeah.
Our guy is gone.
I did see that in the local elections in that area, it was just a full bald sweep for Reform.
Yeah.
Now, you know, obviously, local elections and parliamentary elections are very, very different beasts. They really are. I mean, one is a good indication of the other, but they're not the same thing. There's all different dynamics going on a number of different levels. However, still, the whole place, literally the whole place, swept Reform by Reform.
Yeah.
So, okay, and it's not a safe seat. I mean, to put it in some context, that Gaunton and Denton...
Yeah,
that was a much safer seat. The Labour majority there was more like 13,000. Labour came third in it.
Yeah.
So they're complete. In other words, the Labour strategists here, or the Burnham camp strategists, are utterly, utterly relying, really, really leaning on the fact that he's just so crazily popular in Manchester that he's the king of the north, king of the north. And that wherever he sits, wherever he stands, he'll just definitely win it. I don't think that's a given, do you?
No, absolutely not. And I saw the video. I don't know if you saw it. I think he was with Greater Manchester in a committee, and he was just getting hounded by the general public. I think some woman was literally standing over, pointing at him and just shouting as loud as she could to try and make her voice heard. Fair play to her.
Yeah.
Mate, he was getting ripped an absolute new one, and it's all on video. And it's just, how can you even think that this guy is popular there? I just think it's another case of, you know, internal factions believing within their bubble that they have a popular candidate, or they know the best interests for the British people. It's one of those, once again, very out of touch, to the point where it's almost sinister. You know, I mean, it's almost like, how do you not see that the public really hate you at the moment, like really despise you? And it's just falling on such deaf ears. I mean, I mean, it's the definition of careerist bubble. So I don't know. We will see. But Burnham losing catastrophically is kind of what we want, right?
That would be funny. And of course, he's got to resign from being the mayor of Manchester as well. So that that will be, there'll be another election for that.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if Labour didn't win that as well. If Reform or the Greens or whoever picked that up as well, that would be nice. Oh, actually, that leads me slightly on to something. You may or may not be able to tell me, so feel free to say, I just don't know or I can't tell you. Do you know if Restore have got any any intentions of putting someone up there in this by-election or even in the mayoral election that there will be in Manchester?
So, the party line at the moment is we haven't come to a formal decision yet. So that's where we're at the moment. In my own personal opinion, that's separate from the party line.
You're allowed
And I'm putting that on record that this is my own personal opinion.
Yep.
I think we should watch and see who is going to stand for Reform. You know, it could be a Boris Wave candidate. It could be a parachuted in someone from within their party. It could be Zia. I highly doubt it, but it could be. It could be anyone. So I think, in my personal opinion, I think we should see who is going to stand in that by-election from Reform and just play it by ear. Although, you know, I can think of two people who would be fantastic, you know, for that particular by-election. However, at the moment, we haven't come to a formal decision. I had a feeling that that question was going to be asked. so, yeah, I think it's a very exciting time. I don't know if you saw the betting odds as well. I mean, Restore was third to win.
I haven't seen that.
And we have, there's been no formal decision being made yet. I think betting odds have put us third to win, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
I believe it's only 5%, but still, for us to be prompted on that, I mean, we're not even getting prompted on polls, as you know. Yet we're managing to deliver. I mean, Great Yarmouth, from the Great Yarmouth first results and campaigning there 7 days in a row and watching the count and being there when they announced the winners. I mean, I'm still on a high now, and it was just fantastic. I mean, you saw when you came up and we had a brief chat and I was going around on the doors and we briefly had an interaction. And obviously your friend Nate, friend of the show, Nate, who joined some of the door knocking as well, to see what it was like. I mean, that was an overwhelming victory. So it is possible. It is certainly possible. But just to reiterate, yes, the decision hasn't been formally made yet.
Fair enough. No, fair enough. I see all sorts of people, like even Sammy Woodhouse, all sorts of people asking. I mean, I immediately ask myself the question, oh, I wonder if they will or not. But yeah.
What's your view? What's your view on it?
If I could just call all the shots, if I was Rupert, I would put someone there. Even if the polling looked like we wouldn't actually win it, because it's, I probably would, just because it's experience. It puts the flag up, saying we're prepared. We are prepared to gamble with the reputation. We're not afraid of losing all those various things. No, we're up for it. We're a real party that's going to contest anything and everything we can.
Yeah,
that would be my feeling, my opinion. That would be my personal opinion. And also, I feel like, I think it's fair to say that anywhere that is right-leaning, anywhere that's like a Tory area or certainly a Reform area, that's where Restore are likely to do best. You know, it's strong, like Lib Dem and the few remaining Labour strongholds are maybe a lost cause for Restore, or some constituencies in London that are just almost entirely foreign, like Tower Hamlets areas or whatever, somewhere like West Streeting's seat in Ilford North or whatever. Yeah, not so much, but somewhere that's like a disaffected, disenchanted part of Manchester, working class part of Manchester, where Reform just cleared up. I feel like that's a really good place for Restore to give it a go.
Yeah.
I feel like. I feel, just my personal opinion, again, if I was at the helm, I'd be like, I'd sort of want to foster a feeling of not being afraid.
Yeah.
You may well come second or third or fourth, but okay, so be it. That's politics.
Yeah.
But we're going to throw our hat in the ring. That was my feeling. But if you guys decide that it's still too early, there's not enough time, things like that, that's also, I think, without sounding like too much of a sick fan, I actually genuinely think that's fair enough because Restore is still so young, isn't it? Let's not forget. It's barely out of the crib, really. Only a few months old, formally. So I get it. But anyway,
and look at what we've done. And look at what we've done in the meantime, right? I mean, it is just unbelievable. I mean, we could have halved the votes from Great Yarmouth. We could have halved each candidate's vote, the 9 seats that we won, and we would have still won.
The margin of success was remarkable,
in a local election. It really was. And I'm not saying that to, you know, I'm being very biased here. I'm trying not to be as biased. But it seriously, when you look at the number crunch, you look at the turnout, I mean, the candidate I was campaigning with, Michael French, fantastic bloke.
Frenchie.
When we were out campaigning for him, he was a little bit wobbly. He wasn't sure what would happen. But then when the results came in and he got a 49.5% turnout, and I think it was over 1,800 votes for a local election, whereas I think Reform had like 800. I mean, it was unbelievable. Genuinely unbelievable. I'm so happy. But yes, regardless of what we decide to do, obviously I back Rupert's and the team's decision. If we do decide to do it, I'd be more than happy to door knock again. That was really fun. Canvassing is a lot of fun. Knocking on doors and just trying to find out voting intention. I loved it. I thought it was great. Go out with a team, with a map, and try and... find voter intentions from different closes. I thought it was great. Cool. You know, we've really got to look at these tactics now and really sort of home in on the formula to winning Great Yarmouth first and applying that nationwide now. We've set the precedent now. So, yeah, in my total opinion, I agree. Why not? I think personally, in my view, we should. You know, there's a lot of people online talking about splitting the vote, splitting the vote. I'm so bored of that paradigm.
I'm done with that argument.
Nobody owns your vote. Nobody. Not a single party, not even Restore, owns your vote. It's up to us. It's up to the party in question to galvanize the public, to prove that we are the real deal and to say, this is why you should vote for us. And the big reason is that we will not stand careerist politicians and that we are outside of the establishment where the rest of the parties have decided to cozy up to it, including Reform, as we know. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I am done with that argument. That argument is what kept our politics a two-party thing, Conservative and Labour, for so many decades. You can't split the vote, otherwise the other side will get it. No, that whole paradigm can go take a long walk off a short pier. Not interested in any of that. Or you might split the Reform vote. Don't care. Don't care. Yeah, they're as much a political enemy as the Lib Dems. So I don't care. Yeah. Or you might let Labour in. Well, that's politics. Yeah. What? Yeah. We're going to vote for what we want. We're going to vote for a party that's patriotic. And at least a bit nativist. Is that too much to ask? No. So I'm not... And Reform are just uni-party containment, aren't they? They really are just the teal Tories. So I'm not interested in hearing from them. You're going to split the vote. Don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
Get away from me with that. okay, so... one other thing I want to ask you, while we're talking about Restore and everything and the local issues... I believe because we had Harrison in the other day, he was telling me that he was doing a bit of the vetting as well. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because obviously that's one of the biggest things, isn't it? You want the right people. And so how was that experience for you, doing a whole bunch of the vetting side of stuff?
Yeah, obviously, I don't want to diverge into too much detail, of course, naturally. Sure. But it's been very, very eye-opening. It's been fascinating. We've had all sorts of people from all walks of life come forward and want to be part of the movement. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of people that have applied to want to either become branch organizers or just to get involved. I mean, you know, our inbox is just continuous. It just doesn't end. So it's wonderful to see the galvanization and see the amount of people that are willing to not just vote for us, not just become members, but actually want to get involved. I mean, I set up a branch in Horsham, where I am, and I was expecting about 40 to 50 people to turn up. And I think we got 120 turn up. I didn't have enough chairs. People were sitting on the floor to try and listen to, you know, what we were talking about and trying to get people involved in volunteering. And unbelievable. It's been wonderful. So on the vetting side, well, as we know, I think looking at other parties, let's say, and how they are vetting their candidates is absolutely atrocious. Mm. Absolutely atrocious. So we're bearing in mind, you know, trying to do as much as we can to plug the holes, essentially, of anyone trying to come in, whether it be an infiltrator, whether it be someone with a bit of an interesting past, let's say. I mean, didn't we have a reform council that's just been elected that is leading a double life as a porn star, I believe? Is that correct? Did you read that?
I did see something on Twitter briefly the other day on that. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, we want to avoid stuff like that, really. So I think it's been a fascinating learning curve. Obviously, you know, you have to bear in mind we're not going to get everything correct.
No, it's impossible.
It really is impossible to be 100% perfect. And I understand that people are dismayed within British politics, as am I. This is the reason why I am here, is because finally there is a home. And so, you know, we're not going to get it all right. Of course we're not. And there will be in the future, who knows, someone or, you know, whoever that will slip through the cracks. That's natural. That will happen. It's just a case of how we deal with it. And I'm very confident in our team as well that have been helping out with not just the vetting, but the organization and the logistical skills behind the scenes. Absolutely fantastic team. And we really do work as a team to try and help each other and support each other during this process, because it's tough and we're dealing with a lot of people. So, you know, we have our ear to the ground and our eyes watching, making sure that, you know, everything is going smoothly and we're just looking out for the right people. And who has the correct skill set for each different role, like a branch organizer. And yeah, I think next stop is candidates. So that's going to be incredibly interesting. So we shall see.
Ooh, okay. Let's get back to the papers here and just quickly run through a couple of things. So we're told West Streeting resigns as health secretary with devastating critique of PM's performance. Not really. He said there was a bit of a vacuum at the top. He was actually sort of pretty sycophantic towards him, if anything. Andy Burnham sets his sights on becoming UK's next Prime Minister, and MP as MP stands down, that's that Josh Simons, to offer him possible route back to Westminster. He will campaign on cost of living, quote, much bigger change is needed at a national level, quote. Okay, Andy. If you say so. Yeah. All right. You're more of a socialist. You're the more tax, more spend, more. Classic. That's all he is. There's nothing... As if his Andy Burnham's economics are somehow brilliant. As if they... It's
Burnham
like,
economics.
Yeah. Burnhamonics. I can't even say it. Okay.
Burnhamonics.
Reform stands in way of his commons return. Yeah, Nigel said... You can't blame him. Of course he would. Right? It's the obvious move. He said, oh, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at this one then. Oh, yeah. We'll try everything to win that seat.
Well, put it this way, if we do decide to stand, whatever decision makes, and if we do decide, I'll tell you what, I'm going up. I'm going up to door knock, and I think we'll have an army of patriots up there to help with the canvassing and to help with the volunteering, like Great Yarmouth. So we'll probably throw the kitchen sink as well. Good. You know, if that is the decision.
Brilliant. Yeah, that'd be nice. Every vote that doesn't go to Labour. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. What have we got there? Rest of the cabinet must now decide how long they stick with Starmer or whether they encourage timetable for a leadership contest. I've never bought this idea that Starmer's going to agree to a timetable for leaving like Tony Blair did. It's very, very rare. It's the only example I can really think of where that happened at all was Tony Blair. And that was because there was a very, very specific pact with him and Gordon Brown. I don't know where they keep coming up with this. Get Keir Starmer to agree to a timetable to leave. He won't do that.
No, of course not. No, of course not. Obviously, there is a lot wrong with our politics. You know, for example, I think when you have someone in, say, local elections, whether it be Reform or whoever, there's trouble within, like, minute things within politics that need to be changed, as we know. You know, rules standing around, like, you know, you must stand if someone, like, a big defection happens, for example. Like, call a little by-election, you know. If someone votes you in and you haven't gotten the consent from your voter base, your constituency, in terms of, you know, who they decided to vote for, there needs to be, in my personal opinion, some rules around that, some changes. But when it comes to a timetable, I mean, I don't think that this government is ever going to agree. The whole uni party is not going to agree to a timetable. Of course not. Of course not. They want to cement their legacy, even if the legacy is awful and they're just so tone deaf they can't even see it. They want to cement that. They want their arc, just as Nigel wants his arc. You know, so none of them are going to agree to such a thing.
Yeah. As soon as you do, of course, your political authority is massively undermined. People are like, well, I don't have to do or listen to anything you're saying because on this date, you're gone. So you truly do turn yourself into like a zombie leader, a zombie cabinet or whatever. So I can't believe that. And as we've already said, I think on this stream, I've certainly said a bunch of times before, I just don't think that's what Starmer's like as a man, as a politician, as a strategist for what it's worth. Is that, no, I'm in power now. I will stay. I think yesterday even I invoked Ceausescu or Mao or something. No, I'm in power and I will stay in power. And the rest of the world can collapse and burn around me before I just give it up. I feel like that's what he's like.
Yeah. Well, that's what I gauge. That's what I'm gauging from Starmer. So I think that's a good observation.
Mm. Okay, last couple of things here. Streeting calls for, quote, the best possible field of candidates and battle of ideas, not factions. Yeah, all right, bro.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you say so, bruh. Yeah, I feel like he either hasn't got those 81 MPs or he's just fallen in line with the overarching strategy of it's burn them or bust.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the last thing, Angela Rayner settles her £40,000 of unpaid stamp duty after HMRC investigation. What do you think of that? It was on the morning of the day of resignations, the very morning.
Funny that
she got cleared of any wrongdoing.
Took her a while, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like I've said earlier, majority of politics is all optics. So when there is, and it's optics and opportunity. So when you find that there is a leadership bid, miraculously all these scandals just suddenly like disappear or they disseminate or they get resolved. Mm. So yeah. Funny timing that. I don't know.
Very, very convenient for Ms. Rayner. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Indeed.
What have we got? Just quick whip through the rest of the headlines, and so it begins. Labour's great pretenders. Oh, yes. They're the great pretenders. What a pack of losers. Look at this. Not an ounce of testosterone between them. Actually, Rayner's got more tea than either of these two numpties, hasn't she? The Express, pure filth. Look, the King really worried about anti-Semitism. Really, really, really worried about anti-Semitism. Didn't say a peep about Southport, but all right. Didn't say a peep about Wayne Broadhurst, but okay, all right. Yeah, worry about the Jews in Golders Green, though. Yeah. All right. We had a poll. We did a poll, didn't we? Harry, can you bring that up for me? Let's see. What did we... We asked you guys just over 1,200 votes. Loads more ticking in. Be 1,300 in a moment. We asked, do you think Andy Burnham will win his by-election?
No.
Oh. 63% say no. 24% say, 25% say maybe. Mm-hmm. All they know is their gut says maybe. And 12% say yes. So 63%. Again, nearly every morning. If you've got that on a national referendum, you'd claim complete to that a victory, wouldn't you, on that?
Oh, yeah.
5,300 odd majority. That's not. They really got to hope that it's just his whole King of the North shtick that wins it for him. That's a bit of a shaky thing to hang everything on, isn't it? All right. Let's have a look at a few more stories today, and then I'll let you go. So on the BBC, look, I'm thinking like a turtle. You know, sometimes when you see people. And they put you in mind of an animal one way or another. You know, like Jess Phillips, a horse, obviously, for example. I'm getting like a turtle vibe off of Andy Byrne.
Oh, like, my gosh.
A claymation turtle. Okay.
Is it because of the shape of his head? Is that why, Byrne?
Yeah. There was one or two others. It's multiple Burnham. It's Burnham or bust. Hashtag Burnham or bust. So Trump's in China with Winnie the Pooh. And apparently they're getting on really well.
Yeah, of course.
And Trump's talking to him all about Iran, trying to leverage stuff in Iran. There was one story in the Mail I thought was of mild interest. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, no. Anyway, it was about Nigel. It was about Nigel's £5 million. That's in the news cycle yesterday and today a bit. And that he actually said that he bought a home, a £1.4 million home with cash. Probably not literally physical notes, but in other words, he just paid for it all up front in one go. £1.4 million house after he received that £5 million gift. I mean, have you been keeping up with this story at all? Do you think there's anything there? Because, you know, just to quickly say, on one end of the spectrum, it could be absolutely 100%, completely legit. He didn't break any rules or regulations, and this is nothing. This is just his enemies trying one more gambit to try and get him. It could be that it's really nefarious and dodgy and corrupt, and he will actually lose his seat. They'll recall him, and they'll have to have a by-election there, and he's disgraced. What are you? Yeah. I really don't know. We'll have to see what the investigation is. What do you think?
I haven't been keeping properly up to date with it, if I'm totally honest.
Fair enough. All right,
because
fair enough.
It's just one of those things that is another bit of Nigel noise, you know, in terms of not necessarily like, I don't understand, like, I don't get what's going on with him. I saw his tweet about Mr. Habib. I did see that. I don't know if you saw that.
We made a video on it about it on State of Politics.
Yeah, he... I know he's threatening, or he has put in legal action, know, because I think Habib made some comments regarding, I don't know if that was in conjunction with this particular.
Shall I let people know real quick about that? Just real quick, let people know what you're talking about there. So sure. Nigel got given this £5 million by this millionaire, didn't declare it. Perhaps should have declared it. That's what the actual inquiry would be about. Need he have declared it or not? Anyway, he's just given £5 million. Ben Habib, the other day, goes on the internet and says, I'm just going to tell you a story now, and the powers, the people like Nigel and that Harborne guy, they can sue me if they want, but this is the truth. And then went on to allege that it was all a stitch-up, going back years, going back to the Boris years, £1 million thrown around here and there, backroom deals here or there, all sorts of sort of, if they're untrue, slanderous things. If they're true, devastating things for Nigel. So all sorts of allegations. Okay, Ben Habib did that. And Nigel did come out and tweet, right, I'm starting legal action against you now, Ben. Because Ben Habib was like, because people do that all the time. Well, not all the time, but that's not a completely unheard of thing to allege something and you know it's true and you say, oh, take me to court. I'm perfectly comfortable, confident in myself that you won't take me to court because I know I'm speaking the truth. And then when people don't take you to court, it's sort of indicated on that. But when they go, oh no, I am taking you to court though. That is a liar. That is libelous, slanderous or whatever. Well, Nigel did.
Yeah.
Ben Habib played that card and Nigel's like, no, I'm going to take you to court, bro. So we'll see, I guess. It's just another one of those things. Just watch, sit back with some popcorn.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's one of those situations, isn't it? We just have to sort of wait and see what happens with that because I have no idea. Like, I'm out of that. Like,
suppose
you guys
so, yeah.
go and have your argument over there. Like,
yeah, slowly back away from that one. Just
but,
keep an eye on
Yeah, literally like the Homer Simpson meme. Yeah. Literally back into the bushes. Like, okay, we'll just leave you to it. Like. Pretty bizarre. look, I think in my view, I don't know too much about this particular thing that's happening. I did see under the same breath that Nigel said, even according to Elon Musk, that he, I think he said something, he claims that he was being given money. I'm not sure if this is, you know, word for word what he said. So, you know, take this with a pinch of salt, but he said something, like loosely about how Musk tried giving him money to tell him to say certain things or, you know, policy or whatever. And he said no, allegedly. And then I saw Musk tweeted underneath Nigel saying, you know, this is a lie. This is totally untrue. And I think it was around the same line of questioning. I think it was for The Sun. I think it was, what is his name? Cole. I forgot his name. But they were. I think he was being questioned about this particular money situation. And then he was, I think Farage was doing his showmanship thing where he would say, well, I can't be bought. Yeah, all right, bro.
Didn't you have a Cameo account where you were literally bought for like 70 quid at a pop?
Yeah.
I mean, bought,
talking about Big Chungus.
Yeah. Harry, bring up this article real quick. Yeah, so this is a bit of a thing with a bit of a spat with Nigel and Elon, where apparently Nigel had said that Elon offered him money and that he, Nigel, turned it down. Mm. And Elon just came out and said, Nigel flat up said, quote, Farage is lying. That's what Uncle Elon said. He just called him a liar. That's not true. Then other people some people say that Elon has offered or given money to Restore. I don't believe that's true. I think he might have offered, he might have said something, might have hinted at it, but as far as I'm aware, he hasn't actually ever given Restore a penny, as far as I understand. I don't know. I'm not the bursar.
No,
I'm not
no.
the treasurer of Restore, but I don't believe he has.
Neither.
Right, okay.
No,
fair enough.
I have no idea. I have no idea. Couldn't tell you. It's above my pay grade.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Okay. Well, we're getting towards the top of the hour, and I've still got to do on this day in history. Must run around to super chats. Lewis, thank you very, very much for joining me. It's a pleasure. As
thank
always,
you.
Hopefully we'll have you back at some point before too long. Hopefully we'll get you in.
Absolutely.
Get you in the studio in Swindon. You'll be on the podcast. Massive friend of the channel. So once again, thanks very much for your time, and I hope you have a great day.
Keep up the hard work, and hopefully, I'll see you in person again very, very soon.
Brilliant. Thank you, sir. Okay. Lewis the Beard Brackpool there. I'm just calling him that. That's the first time as well, so I've just made that up. That's a great beard. It's a luxuriant beard. It's a sort of beard a boy would dream of. Okay. All right. Let's do on this day in history. On this day, down through the centuries, what happened? No, Harry, would you mind moving the thing ever so slightly to the left so I can, you know what I mean? Left, yeah, a bit, a tiny bit more, actually, if you don't mind. Just so I can see. That's it. That's it. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So on the 15th of May, down through centuries, what happened of note? Okay. On this day in 1252, Pope Innocent IV issues the papal bull of ad exterpanda. Probably mispronouncing that. Which authorizes but also limits the torture of heretics in the medieval Inquisition. Yeah, there you go. It's sort of the Roman Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Not many people expect the Roman Inquisition. But there you go. All right, there's a lot that could be said about that, but whenever I have in the past, once or twice, I'm talking about Galileo, for example, who wasn't actually tortured. He was only shown the implements of torture. Whenever I've talked about torture at the hands of Catholics in the medieval period, I often get a load of Catholics in the comments going mad. Trying to rewrite history, trying to say it never happened or whatever. I'll just move on then. Heaven forbid we offend some Catholics. All right, on this day in 1615, German astronomer Johannes Kepler, one of my all-time favourites, Kepler, discovers the third of his three planetary laws, the harmonic law. Love Kepler. There's the original Carl Sagan Cosmos 1970s documentaries about space and science. One of those episodes is almost in a big chunk of it. Most of it is dedicated to talking about the life and career and thought and mathematics of Kepler. Absolutely pivotal person. Kepler's up there with like Newton or Clerk Maxwell or something. Kepler, absolutely pivotal person in human advancement, in human civilization. Yeah, a fantastically interesting life as well. Lived through the wars of religion and everything. Loads of stuff, loads of things went down in his life other than just working out how the universe operates. The third planetary law, if I recall, I'm no scientist, I'm no physicist, no mathematician. But it's to do with working out how the time of an orbit, how long it takes a body to orbit. There's like a very, very, very specific relationship between that and how big the orbit is. It might sound a bit obvious to us now. Imagine it's the early 17th century. That was entirely new. I mean, they were still dealing with Ptolemaic ideas about perfect solids and stuff, about how there were nested perfect shapes in the cosmos. Crazy, crazy medieval nonsense. So, okay, the planetary laws of Kepler, pivotal thing in human civilization. On this day in 1841, first emigrant wagon trail to reach California. Think about how now California where leaves Independence, Missouri, on a 1,730-mile journey over the higher Sierra Nevada mountain range. Yeah, again, do you remember yesterday? I think it was yesterday, was it? They had a thing about the Lewis and Clark expedition in the age of Jefferson, what, 1804, 1806, something like that, wasn't it? So look, it's still another 35 years after that before a true concerted effort even begins for citizens of the United States to settle California. 1841, that's like, it's only 25 years before the Civil War. I just always find it interesting how late it is that the United States moved right out to the West Coast and people started living there in any big numbers. That's so late to me. You might think that process started 100 years before that or more. No. No. Okay. On this day in 1869... National Woman Suffrage Association forms in New York, founded by Susan B. Anthony. Okay, I don't really care. On this day in 1940, Richard and Maurice MacDonald opened the first McDonald's restaurant in San Bernardino, California. I'm just calling California, California now. Yeah, McDonald's. First ever McDonald's. 1940. Interesting. I love McDonald's, me. I know it's processed slop. Highly processed. Love a Big Mac, though. If I'm just honest with myself. Big Macs are lovely. Okay. On this day in 1951, AT&T becomes the first US corporation to have 1 million stockholders after a young car salesman, Brady Denton, purchases 7 shares worth $1,078. You've got shares in AT&T. Nice. That gives you a measure of it, doesn't it? In 1951 money, 7 shares were already worth over $1,000. It's quality blue chip stock, that is. Okay, and on this day in 1988, the Soviet Union begins withdrawing its 115,000 troops from Afghanistan. Yeah, I want to do some content about the Soviet war in Afghanistan at some point. It's one of those things I've been interested in on and off over the years. Exactly what happened and the US involvement. There's a Tom Hanks movie once, wasn't there? And the Stinger missiles and why it was that the Soviet Union failed so miserably in a purely military sense in Afghanistan in the 70s and 80s. It's an interesting story. Of course, 1988, it's after Chernobyl. You're getting right towards the end of the Soviet Union now. Right, that's the end of the Gorbachev times, nearly. Only a few more years to go. Well, the fall of Berlin Wall's in 89, isn't it? And the Soviet system formally collapsed in 1990, or is it 1991? So, we're right near the end of the Soviet experiment there. Interesting, fascinating. All right, should we do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Let's have a look at that stuff. All right, so we always do the Rumble Rants first, don't we? There's a fair few, actually. We've got a fair few Rumble Rants and Super Chats. So, Rumble Rants. Ooh. Global church history has been pipped again. I mean, kudos to Jetlag89. The early bird catches the worm. But, okay, so, if anyone is watching the Bow Show for the first time, global church history always, nearly always gets in first. There is, we got a contender. Got a pretender to the throne. And new. Alright. Jetlag89 says, on this day in 1532, the English church submits to Henry VIII. In passing the submission of the clergy, the church surrenders its right to make provincial laws independently of the crown. Yeah, at the moment, on Epochs, my history-themed show behind the paywall on lotuslotus.com, you consider signing up for as little as £5 a month, bronze tier membership. At the moment, over 260 episodes, all long form. So a few hundred hours of me talking about history, everything from Göbekli Tepe through to the 1980 Iranian Embassy siege, SAS Iranian Embassy siege in London, and anything and everything in between. On there, got loads and loads of content about the monarchy, the English monarchy. Well, going back to Roman Britain, all the way through. I've got stuff with that Elizabeth Havering about King Arthur. The mostly fictional King Arthur, the Arthurian legend, all the way through King Alfred, from Alfred all the way on. From Alfred through to, at the moment, I'm on Henry VIII. I just think last Sunday was the end and the death of natural causes of Henry VII, Henry Tudor, Henry VIII's dad. This Sunday is Henry VIII Part 1 on Bowdade's Epochs. So, I shall be talking, I don't talk about it in this one, because I'm just setting it up, talking about his early life and his early reign, a little bit of Wolsey. I'm going to do Henry VIII in loads and loads and loads of detail, it'll be many, many parts. So, in probably a week or two, maybe as much as a month, I'll be getting to the full break with Rome. And when Henry decides he's going to be the head of a church in England, and his demand that they submit to his will, his regal will. So yeah, thanks for that, Jetlag. Thanks for that. We'll get to it soon on Epochs, in as much detail as I can muster, almost. Okay, in at number two, global church history. You can't win them all, mate. Can't win them all. Don't beat yourself up. You say, today in 221 AD, Liu Bei, probably pronouncing that wrong, was made Emperor of the Han, beginning the Three Kingdoms period. Yeah, he's one of the most famous ones, isn't he? One of the more famous ones. That one, he was like, did you say he founded the Han? Yeah, made the first Emperor of the Han. Yeah, he's one of the more famous ones, isn't he? He's considered, as I understand it, Chinese history isn't my real wheelhouse. I've got a long form piece of content all about the first Emperor of China. But that's like 400 years before that. That's like in the 200s BC, that one. Qin Shi Huangdi. If I pronounce that really terribly. Qin Shi Huangdi. But that's 400 years before this guy. And yet he is one of the more famous ones. He's known as like a really benevolent, sort of kindly, good warlord. He's a warlord. He became an emperor, made himself an emperor. But he's sort of as like sort of, some sort of paragon of rulership. Anyway, okay. And then the other thing you say, because you usually give us two, thanks church history, global church history. The other one you say is, what have you said? And in 1501, on this day in 1501, Miguel and Gaspar Corta Real set sail towards what they later named Labrador. So, yeah, they're like, that's just before the age of Magellan, isn't it? They're Portuguese guys. Labrador's up Canada, isn't it? It's way up the top of Canada. All that stuff. They were both lost at sea, and their father was an explorer as well. Miguel, I can't remember what happened to... One of them was just lost at sea as well. Just disappeared one day. Into a squall or a fog. Never seen again. Interesting. Interesting. Okay, next one. Skulldrazer. Skulldrazer just says first. And your third. You think you can beat global church history and Jetlag 89 by coming in at 3 minutes to nine, 3 minutes to eight? Oh no. That's not good enough, I'm afraid. Must try harder. I'm only mucking about. You sent another one in, Skulldrazer. I hope everyone is having a beautiful morning. Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful. Well, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's the same spelling, but he's put bow in capitals. Yeah, I hope everyone is having a great morning. Looking forward to the weekend ahead, hopefully. Okay, for Tian Barber says, morning, Bo, you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. Are you, sir? I hope so. You put... Lewis Brackpool is always an interesting segment. Restore our third in Makerfield, according to Ladbrokes. It's potentially a very funny by-election. Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? Who knows, if Restore did want to stand somewhere there, they might not at all, but if they do and they try really hard, who knows? Could turn that into a win. Got to think positive. All right, the next one, Bone Apple Tea Party, says, Bo and Lewis today, ? We are spoilt rotten. This Labour leadership dram, probably drama, you probably meant, this Labour leadership drama is like Game of Thrones, but without a scintilla of testosterone. Yeah, it is, right. It is like a bit like that, look. There's not much testosterone, is there, flying around. In that leadership contest. Ugh, okay. Conscripted Ork says, have you considered he's being allowed to run by Keir because he knows he isn't going to win? What, Andy Burnham? Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah. It may be. That's totally, totally possible. Keir Starmer knows the numbers, the ultimate numbers, and is confident that he, Keir Starmer, will win. Yeah. Thing is, if it comes down to the membership, the Labour Party membership, i.e. if after everything's shaken out and there's only two remaining, and those two are Burnham and Starmer, I think everyone is saying that Burnham wins that, like, easily. I guess Keir Starmer, if what you're saying is true, which may well be true, that he expects he would just win at a much earlier point than that. He would get 50% before that stage. But who knows? Who knows? If anyone remembers when Ed Miliband beat his own brother, David Miliband, to be leader after Gordon Brown, would it be? That must have been after Gordon Brown. Everyone was saying, well, this is a lock for David Miliband. David Miliband is the heir apparent. All the numbers, whatever you want to look at, the unions, the membership, the party itself. It's David. It's David Miliband. It's his. But we've got to go through this. We've got to cross the T's and dot the I's on this leadership contest. Only turned out Ed Miliband pipped him. His own little brother. Can you imagine their Christmas dinners these days? Awkward. Just ended David Miliband's career, basically. He was that close to being the leader of the opposition and may well have been prime minister. Nope. Little brother nicked it off you and then himself completely failed. Ed Miliband, what a freak. What a weirdo. Okay, Conscripted Orc says, right now, Restore have an inevitability about them. Unstoppable. Aim high, vote low, millions must go. It's going to happen. Remigration is inevitable. You say, if they run and don't win, those optics will be lost. Not that I don't want them to. Oh, I see what you're saying. If they ran there and lost, this veneer of undefeatability, of being undefeated, will vanish. Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. If all that happens, it plays out like that, it's true. But it's going to happen at some point anyway. Restore's going to stand somewhere and lose at some point anyway. Can't be afraid of that, right? It's like being a fighter or a race driver or something. You can't be paralysed by the fear of losing. You're going to lose at some point, right? It's very, very, you can't win them all. It's very, very, very rare that you get, say, a boxer, Floyd Mayweather or Joe Calzaghe. You retire undefeated. It's almost unheard of. Or in politics, it is unheard of. You're going to lose at some point. You can't let that hold you back, can you? That's my feeling. Okay. But you got a point, though. I know what you mean. The optics of it aren't perfect. But that politics isn't perfect. It's really, really dirty and imperfect. By definition, pretty much all the time. It's the art of compromise, isn't it? You've always got to compromise. It's just an exercise in attempting something and often failing over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah, get used to it not being perfect. Okay, the last Rumble rant is from somebody called Chaddy304. I don't think I've seen their name before. Chaddy304 says, our first Restore Britain meeting tonight for Wigan and Leith. Oh, not Wigan and Lee? Wigan and Lee. Nice, brilliant. Brilliant. Best of luck to you. Makerfield is one of our constituencies. Lee, my constituency, was Burnham's safe seat for years. We'll see you up here, Lewis. Oh, great. Chaddy 304. Brilliant. You're on the front lines. In the trenches. Lovely. I've got no special insight. I wonder what the leadership at Restore will do, whether they'll want to do it or not. As I say, I kind of hope they do, but I'd understand if they don't. But all right, we'll see. If they do, best of luck to you, Chaddy. Genuinely, best of luck. All right, we've got some YouTube ones. What have we got? A dozen or so, maybe a few more. Let's whip through them a bit. I'm on the podcast again today, so can't spend all morning on them. I'm on the podcast at 1 p.m, which is summertime. Check it out. Okay. Like a Bot says, and coming in at number one for the most based breakfast show is The Real LBC. Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club, hashtag The Real LBC. Right here, you're watching it. Yeah, and Like a Bot in at number one. Nice. Katora some called Katora, says, good morning, Beau, Harry, and my fellow band of brothers and sisters. They've put ancestors in brackets. I met yesterday at the First Restore branch meeting, the best among us. Great, brilliant. Super. The ground game for Restore Britain is real. All those naysayers and haters and defeatists that said Restore Britain would never be anything other than a rightoid echo chamber on Twitter. You're profoundly mistaken. The ground game up and down the length and breadth of this country is something to behold. It's something remarkable. I've been involved in party politics on and off my whole adult life. I've never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it. It's the difference between success at the ballot box and not. It is the difference. Tens of thousands, or over 100,000, 130,000 plus, is it? Don't even know the last numbers of overall membership. A fair chunk of those people are prepared to actually turn up to things and physically do stuff IRL. What more can you ask for? Thank you, Katkora, thank you for turning up to your branch meeting and doing stuff and being there, making a difference. It is the difference. Can't buy it. People's time. It's the most valuable thing they've got. And they're prepared to give that. It makes my heart swell. If I was an Italian or a more emotional man, I might shed a tear right now. Enjoy. Enjoy. The ground game's real. It's real. Going to take our country back. Great Johnny M. Is that what this is? Yeah, Great Johnny M says, sell the entry start tune as a ringtone. I'm not sure if we can, Harry. Can we monetize that? I don't know. I'm joking. I don't think so. Are you saying stuff? I can't hear you.
Oh, no. I don't think so, no.
Although one thing I will say, heads up to people, we had some trouble with that. I know people love that bit of music. It is a cool bit of synthwave music, isn't it? But we've had trouble with it in the past, a couple of times. People trying to copyright strike it and stuff. Unfairly. So we got Big Harry, who's a musician, a genuinely professional level musician, genuinely, to write another bit of pretty similar synthwave music. And we're probably going to, Harry, are we going to switch to that? Is that a definite or no?
Yeah, I'm hoping to do it in the next like week or so. I just need to get it rendered.
And I know a lot of you love that bit of music, but we're almost certainly going to change it out. It's a very similar bit of music, isn't it? What Harry wrote and made.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really similar. It's completely in the same vein. But then we won't have to suffer from like these repeated bad faith copyright attempts on it, which is just frustrating. Really, really annoying. Some mornings we don't have it because we're going through some cruddy copyright strike on it. Anyway. That's enough about the music at the beginning. If you really like it, try and record it for yourself or whatever now, because we won't have it forever. Heads up on that one. Okay. People that go around copyright striking stuff on YouTube in bad faith. What a scum move. Scumbag move. All right. Brandon Lucas says, is this the guy played by Gendry? The guy off Skins on that show? How does it feel to have that weird kid on Skins play you? I never watched Skins. I only watched a little bit of Skins, so I don't know. I watched a bit of Skins and thought it was retardedly bad. Remember, I was going out with a girl at the time, and her and all her mates thought Skins was brilliant. And I remember watching it, like, what, an episode or an episode and a half worth of it, and being like, this is terribly written, terribly acted. Like, this is crap. What? This is terrible. Why do you like this? What's good about this? Explain to me why. So I never watched Skins, I'm afraid. So I don't really know exactly what you're talking about there, but thanks for the super chat anyway. Brute Life says, hi Lewis, congrats to the team for the big win. How far along are Restore to having a branch in every constituency? Thanks for all the hard work. Thanks for the super chat. I'm afraid I couldn't have, should have asked him that in real time. I wasn't. I always read the super chats out at the end, but if and when he's back on, I'll ask him all those sorts of questions. So thanks anyway. Shame I couldn't ask him that in real time when he was on. But again, thank you, Brute Life, for the super chat. Okay, we've still got another half a dozen or more to get through. Kick You in the Throat says, that's their name, at Kick You in the Throat, says, getting beard mogged over here. Oh yeah. It's a superior beard. I mean, my beard's not insanely bad. It's what, a 6 out of 10 beard, is it? I don't know. Is that being optimistic even? His is like a solid 9 out of 10, right? Solid 9 out of 10. What more could you ask for, really? Yeah. Got totally beard mogged. Okay. The Educated Yobo says, I think Kia will stay until 2029. Got £10 on it. It might happen. It might happen at this stage. He asked me on Tuesday, I would have said, no way. But at this stage, if they don't have it, they don't hold a leadership contest until July, August, so that Burnham can be in it, and then Keir Starmer wins that, then yeah, quite possibly. Like the way John Major beat Redwood and just stayed on. Or the way Jeremy Corbyn had a leadership contest and won it, didn't he? Whilst he was already leader. It's totally possible. Yeah. Mr. Dicky Bingo, how are you this morning, sir? Not Dinky Bingo. Mr. Dicky Bingo says, Obi-Wan Burnham, the only hope. Oh dear. Yeah. Why do they think he's the guy? They're not. Their brain isn't. Andy Burnham. I was talking about this just on Telegram with a couple of mates yesterday. Looking back at Burnham in like the Labour years, I remember in the Labour years, in the Blair years, he was a nobody. He wasn't taken particularly seriously. He just wasn't. He was just an also guy. Oh, and there's a few other people in Blair's cabinet that you might have heard their name. That's it. You know, that sort of level. Not one of the big beasts at all. Like that guy that looks like he's wearing eyeliner. That guy. Yeah. That's it. That's all he is. All he was. But now he's supposed to be this magic winning behemoth of a political titan. He can't lose. King of the North. Get real. King of the North. Yeah, all right. Okay. Kick You in the Throat again says, Anglosphere fun fact, semicolon. The tallest point in England is Scarfell Pike. At 3,209 feet. Is it? I thought there was another hill. Not much more than a hill, is it? I haven't really got many mountains in England. There's Snowdon in Wales, right? And there's the Ben Nevis in Scotland. But in England itself, is it Scarfell Pike? I thought there was another one. Anyway, okay. If you say it's Scarfell Pike, fair enough. 3,209 feet. People living in Colorado scoff in derision at that. 3,000? That's barely more than a hillock. While a few hundred US towns and cities are sat above this elevation. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, Americans will laugh at such a thing. What, you haven't even got mountains? Where's your deserts and swamps, bro? Where's your mountain ranges? Oh, you haven't got any. And that's very unfortunate for you, isn't it, little Englanders? Well, you haven't got any salt flats. You haven't got like any rolling giant prairies. Oh dear, how embarrassing for you. Yeah, there's no mountains in England, none. There's a few hills. No deserts. No tundras. No prairies. All right. Max Robe says, higher karate or brute? Is this one of those Bart Simpson things where I'm saying something embarrassing? Harry?
I'm not sure.
You just said higher karate or brute. I say it fast enough when it appear that I'm saying something. Higher karate and brute. I don't know. I don't get it. Got a question mark on the end. I don't get it. I probably am just being silly. Okay, sorry about that. Thanks anyway. Wobbly Arrow 84, funny name, says restore/reform can't win a mayor race in Manchester, sadly. I don't see why not. I think the old paradigm that it's just a Labour lock. Don't buy it. Look at Gaunton and Denton. A 13,000 majority in Gaunton and Denton. Labour came third. A long way off as well, a third. We're in a different world. We're in a different politics. Although the mayoral race is, yeah. I wouldn't say you're completely 100% mistaken and wrong, and I wouldn't say that. But I feel like what you're saying there, the sentiment of what you're saying there, isn't as strong as it was. Definitely not as strong as it was. I'll say that. Will someone other than Labour win the mayoralship in Manchester? Don't know. Let's see what the bookies say, what the polls say. Labour probably still get it, won't they? To be honest, they'll probably still get it. Whether it's an absolute gimme, I wouldn't say so. A lot of people, even in Manchester, the natives, the white working class, feel unbelievably betrayed by the fact their country and city is flooded by foreign barbarians, and they're told that they're racists and bigots for noticing it. I think that the depth of that, the feeling of the betrayal of that, can't really be underestimated. I think, could be wrong, you know, but we'll see. Okay, last two we've got here. King Philip, 1861, says, was King George III thought of as a German, being from the House of Hanover? I suspect that must have affected American animosity towards the crown. That's very, very interesting. So George III was, of course, the grandson of George I of Hanover, the Elector of Hanover. So it's only like one, two generations down. George III. Yeah, I mean, George I never learned English properly, or hardly at all. So, yeah, I mean, he was thought of as German in various ways. I still think of King Charles III in 2026 as a German, half German, Saxe, Coburg and Gotha. The House of Hanover. What Americans in, I guess you're talking about in the age of the War of Independence, what American colonists who became citizens of the United States, whether they thought of George III as a German or not, I don't know. There's not that much of that in the sources, in the accounts. It's not like some giant, not that I've seen, not that I'm aware of, some giant long speech by someone like Patrick Henry or John Adams complaining about that the king is German. They might mention it from time to time, in fact they did, but it's not like a massive thing. Well, from what I've read, like Thomas Jefferson constantly mentioning that George III is German. No, not really. Interesting, that was an interesting point. People did appreciate it and did think that, though. As I say, I still think of the House of Windsor as German to this day, pretty much, kind of. They only changed their name to Windsor during World War One because Saxe, Coburg and Gotha sounded too German, or just is highly German. Okay. And the last super chat from Wobbly Arrow again says, too many wet libtards, Blairites, non-voters and students, sad face. Oh, what, like in Manchester? Yeah, you were the person that also said Reform Labour can't win a mayoralship in Manchester. You just say there's too many wets, libtards, Blairites, and non-voters and students in Manchester. You may well be right. You may well be right. You could possibly be right. You know, we shall see. We shall see. All right, we've got one more Rumble Rant came in. I might as well read it while we're here. And it's from reigning champion Jetlag89. He says, happy Friday, all boasters. Boasters with B-E-A-U. Boasters. I hope you all have a grand weekend. Are you Irish? Irish people say grand, don't they? Have a grand weekend. Bo, did your parents name you to manifest how you would appear in later life? Yeah. You've also put in brackets there, no homo, just for the record. Just for the record. I put beard, both you and Lewis, by the way, get mogged. I guess that you meant out. I outbeard both you and Lewis, by the way, get mogged. Yeah, well, fair enough. I can believe it. For me, find it hard to believe you've got a better beard than Lewis. That's difficult to believe. I don't know. Thanks for the super chat, though. Now, my parents named me after Bo Brummel. His real name, and that was only a nickname. His real name was George. His real name was George Brummel. It was only a nickname. It was called Bo. They give me that name. I like it. It's unique. Other than a little bit of bullying at primary school. Bo, where's your arrow? That sort of thing. After that, which was never actually really bad. A bit unique. It's better than being called like Chris or Dave, in my opinion. No criticism of all the Chris's and Dave's out there. So not many people are called Bo. Although on Twitter before now, I've typed in Bo on Twitter search and see if there's anyone else called Bo Dade, you know, when you're bored. Or how many people are called Bo. There's quite a lot of people called Bo in the world, nearly all Americans. There's a fair few of them. A few of them have got massive accounts as well. One guy that's in some band I've never heard of, but he's got hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers. It's quite a lot of Bos. All right, anyway, that's enough about Bo. That's the show. It's now 34 minutes past 9 in the AM, British summertime, on Friday the 15th of May in the year of our Lord, 2026. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers. Thank you for watching this morning and all week. Without you, it's not a thing. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and indeed the coming weekend. Try and make the best of the time, if you can. The most valuable thing you will ever have is your time. Spend it wisely. Carpe diem, seize the day, if you can. All right, until Monday morning then. Take care.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.